meow, 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 meow. This is Freedom Fiends. I am Mr. Derek J, here to inoculate you from indoctrination. Broadcasting live and worldwide from the Liberty Media capital of the world, Keene, New Hampshire, which has been buried under a mountain of snow affecting over 100 million people in North America this evening. Wow. Here to help me warm your synapses this early morning is Chandler St. Pierre.
Worms. How's it going?
Worms, Chandler. Hey, are you safe? Have you been contacted by the government?
Yeah, I got contacted by the government Friday. It was a very traumatic experience.
Oh, no. I want to hear about that. I have not been contacted, thankfully. Michael Dean, regular host of the program, can't be with us tonight. He is shredding on the guitar so furiously that he is powering a small village. We wouldn't want him to let those people down, so rock on, Michael. For those of you new to the Fiends, this is the show that would exist in the Liberty Paradise of the future. And so let's get right into it. Tonight, Chandler and I want to bring you a story about good living skills, freedom, and occasionally we'll remind you that Obama is a liar, a socialist, and his feet stink. So we've got this article by original gangster libertarian Claire Wolf, who teaches us some good living skills, 10 traits for better living. So hopefully we will learn how we can improve our lives, and this could affect everyone equally. I know I want to learn how to live a good life. Chandler's got it almost down perfectly. And so you're gonna tell us a little bit about what Claire Wolf thinks, right?
Yeah. Also, as a shout out to Claire, she's got a really great book called Rats, Your Guide to Protecting Yourself Against Snitches, Informers, Informants, Agents, Provocateurs, Narcs, Finks, and Similar Vermin. You can get that free. Just Google it on the website. I think you just put it in Google and it's the first thing that comes up.
Rats.
Great little book.
-nosnitch.com, I believe, is the website.
Yeah. There you go. So she's got an article on her blog, and I found it on backwoodshome.com. Great website if you're into homesteading and simple living and alternative lifestyle stuff.
And you're a backwoodsy guy, right?
Not as much as I'd like to be, but I try.
I have that vision of you. You've got the long woodsman hair. You talk about chopping wood and living independently. I'm trying to get there. I moved to New Hampshire, and chopping wood and using wood fire and growing your own food is a big part of the way of life up here.
Yeah, it really is. I actually need to get some more wood because I went to get some hot water tonight for some tea, and my pipes is frozen again.
Oh, no.
Gotta love winter.
How are you holding up in this winter environment? Are you using some of these traits for independence?
Well, you try to use what you can, you know. It's costly to live in New England in the wintertime.
How? You grow your own heat source, don't you?
Well, you do, but you can't. I'm not to the point where I can heat my entire home off a wood stove. So I actually looked into building a rocket stove, which is
what?
Yeah.
Would that make you a rocket scientist?
I think it would, because it does involve some pretty heavy duty science, but there's a couple of videos on YouTube and people are doing workshops. Rocket stoves are really, really efficient ways. And they're really efficient ways to heat and cook, and there's different ways to build them. So I'm going to look into that over the next few years. I'd really like to build one of those.
That in my sounds basement. Like your house would just blast off into space. What the heck is a rocket stove?
Well, I don't know enough about it to go into a lot of detail, But I can tell you that the mechanics of it, it's a more efficient way of pushing the heat around.
Okay.
And localizing the heat.
I dig it.
So it's pretty cool. I mean, if our listeners want to check it out, all you have to do is Google rocket stoves, and there's tons of stuff that comes up. This technique's been out for quite a while, but it's starting to gain popularity again. So, yeah, you know, you do what you can in the wintertime. But oil is not cheap, and that's my primary source. In fact, I just had to order another 100 gallons that should be delivered today. So when we get done the show, I'm going to go and start a fire in the basement and turn the electric heaters on and thaw the pipes out and then get some sleep so I can get up in the morning and go to work. Joy, winter.
Yeah, but winter is hard in New England, but...
We were lucky, though. We were supposed to get that big blizzard last night, and it passed us by, but I guess Boston got hit pretty bad.
Well, I got hit pretty bad with it, too. Here in New Hampshire, I was out driving around, which was a stupid thing to do in the middle of a snowstorm. But, you know, sometimes you got to run places. It's difficult, but, you know, you're moving forward independently into the future, growing your independence with rocket stoves, powering your life with futuristic technology, and no longer... depending on, what is it, oil that you're using and electricity? That's old stuff, man. You're going to move on.
Yeah, it is. Well, we'll work.
And lead us into the future. Tell us about how your rocket stove goes next week.
Oh, it won't be next week, boy. I'll tell you that.
All right. Well, maybe you can be like Michael and power a house with guitar shredding.
Well, mine would be drum banging.
Okay.
Yeah, we'll put some kinetic pads on the drum set and start banging away.
There you go.
We can generate.
Yeah, don't waste that energy. Save it.
Yeah.
So give it to us, man. 10 traits for better living by Claire Wolf. I want to know what they are so I can live better.
So her first trait is a sense of choice. If we feel we can make important decisions about our lives and carry them out, we're more likely to be satisfied. Commonly, we believe that the poor have fewer choices and the better off have more. But that's not necessarily true. For instance, a poor person who has chosen material poverty for religious reasons, to pursue adventure, to live a simple life, or to avoid paying high taxes, may actually feel they have more and better choices because of their lack of money than if they were high rolling in dough.
I know, I can relate. Sometimes when you're poor, you have no choices, and the simple life, it just, it's easier, it's happier.
Well, you know, I am poor, but sometimes I would like to live a little bit simpler life. I just got my new tax bill for property taxes, and my mortgage has gone up $70 a month because property taxes have gone up yet again. Oh,
yeah, joy. But that affects everybody, rich and poor, and I think property taxes even affect the rich more than the poor. But you know what they say?
Well, yeah.
Mo money, mo problems. So yeah, true.
It is true. It is. So, conversely, when a well-off person who yielded to family pressure to become a lawyer, marry the right spouse, and pay a big-time mortgage in a country club neighborhood might utterly feel trapped, which is very true. Even people who have been rendered poor by disasters, theft, financial folly, or abuse are better off when they can think, well, maybe I put myself here and maybe I didn't, but in any case, I can now choose how to respond to the situation I'm in. So we always have that choice. And, yeah, choice is really important. The decisions you make, big or small, affect the outcomes that manifest themselves in your life. And you should really be aware before you make choices.
There's a quote I like. I used to have it hanging above my wall in high school, and the quote goes something like this. I don't know if I'm going to get it exactly right, but the thing about choices is, after you make them, they turn around and make you.
That's very interesting.
I can relate to that. You know, it is. Yeah. Like, you're the sum of the choices that you make in life. Like, you right now, where you are, is all of your choices added up into one human being.
Yeah, and I think that one thing that's lost in society today is cause and effect, that idea.
What?
Exactly. You know, every choice, every action has an effect. Sometimes it's very small, and you don't notice it right off. And sometimes it's obviously very, very large. But it's like throwing a pebble in a pond. You see those ripples extend outward.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that's a kind of a cliche analogy, but it's very true. And I think a lot of times you forget cause and effect and how your sense of choice and the decisions you make affect your life and those around you. So it's an important thing to consider and remember.
I know I forget it. Sometimes I fall victim to the victim mentality of saying like, oh, well, you know, life just happened to me and here I am dealing with all of these outside influences, not really having a say in what goes on in the world. You know, like you mentioned, property taxes, right? Well, yeah, that's something I don't feel like I don't have a lot of power over. But then again, you can vote with your feet. You can move to places that have lower property taxes. You can vote. Also, and then you can also choose. Well, I'm saying vote with your feet, right? Not no, vote with your. Yeah, you can vote with your dollar too, by bribing politicians, I guess. I don't know. And you have the choice to not pay property taxes as well. I think there are some people who courageously did that in Massachusetts and, you know, succeeded. Some don't succeed. It's just you do ultimately have the choice. You have every choice in the world.
Yeah, it's a choice you make. And just remember, even if it's a like the property taxes thing, even if it's a morally correct choice not to pay them, you have to be prepared to deal with the consequences. Also, I wanted to tell you last week, and I forgot, I have a friend up here in Maine who thinks very much like us, and she doesn't go along with that whole vehicle registration and permits and all that either.
Vehicle registration is a racket. I mean, I can understand it being a good idea, and this does have to do with a sense of choice, because everyone chooses whether or not they're going to register their vehicle. And I could see it being a good idea where it's like, oh, if there's a hit and run, you need to be able to identify a person by their license plate or their tag or their vehicle or something. But, you know, if that's true, that's not what it's about. Because if that's true, I have a friend who rode around with a private license plate that he made with his phone number on it. So, I mean, that's even more accountable. What can you do with a license plate except to call the authorities and ask them to do something about a problem on the road? With a phone number, yes, you could actually call up that individual right away and say, hey, man, you just cut me off. Or, hey, your lights are out.
You hit it there because it makes you more dependent.
Yeah. This is about increasing your independence.
Independence.
You and the hamster in your brain are listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this.
Nobody. Quit telling me what to do!
To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
Meow, meow.
Meow, meow, meow.
Meow.
And meow.
And meow.
Oh, worms. Annelids.
There's entirely too many wires and cables and kitties running around.
Are you surrounded by wires? You're in a Borg. Welcome. This is Freedom Fiends.
I feel like it.
And it's Derek J. back with you. And Chandler St.
But just remember, resistance is not futile.
No. And we're talking about choice and ways to make your life better. Remember that you have choice. That is number one. And Chandler, we were leading into point number two.
Yeah, we were segueing into that so well. And number two is responsibility. Once you conceive that you have choices, then you accept responsibility for making choices. Oh, accepting responsibility. For shame. Who does that these days? It's funny that responsibility is always seen as onerous, some dreary, painful duty, because in a way, it's a privilege. Accepting responsibility is accepting and acting upon personal power. Even if we've been whacked upside the head by bad health, crime, untrustworthy companions, fire, earthquakes, or accidents, it feels better to be able to say, I'm responsible for what I do now, than it does to lay about and blame God, the government, your mother, the 1%, or an uncaring universe. Sure, sometimes accepting responsibility means we have to face people we'd rather not face and take on chores we'd rather avoid. Sometimes it leaves us feeling burdened by things we have to do or guilty about the things we didn't do. Nobody's going to say that responsibility itself makes people happy. What it does is lay the groundwork for a greater and later satisfaction.
Man, that's the truth.
And I think, you know, if you accept responsibility for your own actions, you're saying that you own yourself. And with that realization comes a certain amount of freedom. I mean, sure, you know, I am an individual. I own myself. You know, I do have to, I am compelled to go along with certain things in society that I don't agree with, but I still have choices. And I ultimately have the choice not to go along with those things. We've mentioned some before. So, you know, as long as you accept that responsibility and accept that your choices will have consequences for good or bad, you really are much more free.
Yeah, I think it's empowering. I mean, like Claire says about the alternative being to blame God or the government or your mother or the 1% or an uncaring universe. I mean, that pretty much includes everything that's not you. If instead you experiment, as I have, with taking responsibility for stuff that you don't even think is your fault, and taking responsibility for other people's actions, even. Like, I work in a store, and sometimes my coworkers will let me down. But if I will take more responsibility for some of their tasks and their chores, it's like, your world is yours to create. So, you know, are you just going to be unsatisfied? Am I just going to be unsatisfied with the job that's being done in the store, or the way it's looking, if it's looking a little shabby or something, or the coffee's not made, whatever small thing it is. Taking personal responsibility for these things is empowering, because it says, no, I'm not going to let the uncaring universe dictate what goes on in my world. I'm going to take total control of that, or what things I can control. So, yeah, responsibility rocks.
Well, I remember... way back when I used to do a different podcast, I was talking to Mama Liberty, who is a really cool cat. She lives out in Wyoming. She's actually in Michael Dean's movie Guns and Weed, The Road to Freedom.
Worms.
And yeah, she's a really cool, hip old lady that carries, and she's a nurse and really self-reliant. And one of the things I remember her saying to me once was that she takes responsibility, yes, and she talked about how sometimes in certain situations you may have to take responsibility for other people's actions, but ultimately you have to own your own actions, and that's what separates you and makes you an individual. And that always stuck with me.
It's something, it occurs to me now, that politicians never do. Like, politicians are professional responsibility abdicators. They just say, oh, hey, this happened. They start to employ the passive voice.
Well, and that's
things
the,
were said, and wars were fought, and we didn't have anything to do with it.
That's the way the system runs. It's specifically designed to avoid responsibility, to
right.
Kick the can down the road.
Yeah, it's not about you. It's about these gods
somewhere. If you all are wondering why we can talk over each other? It's because we are on an amazing new program
You're
called
listening to Freedom Fiends with Michael Dean and his weird friends, tasing you with liberty since 2011. Learn more at freedomfiends.com.
Hey, this is Michael Dean from the Freedom Fiends radio show. I've been working with computer programmer Derek Slopey to create Fiend Phone. I'm using Fiend Phone right now to talk with and record one of my co-hosts in real time. Take it, Davi.
Hey, this is Davi Barker, and I'm 1,000 miles away from Michael, but we sound like we're in the same room.
We sure do, Davi. So, Davi, please tell the nice people more about Fiend Phone.
Fiend Phone is free, open-source software that opens up a global world of possibilities for collaborative, high-quality remote voice media production, and I'm digging it.
People can try the Windows beta version of Fiend Phone right now at fiendphone.com. But we're also raising money to vastly improve Fiend Phone and vastly improve independent talk media worldwide.
So go to fiendphone.com and join the conversation, because if you don't, you'll set liberty back 2,500 years.
That's fiendphone.com, FENPHONE.com. Foxtrot, echo, November, phone.com.
Fiend Phone. I never knew remote audio could be this good.
Therapy.
I was too slow in the last segment, and
yeah,
I said to all our listeners out there, if they're wondering how we can just talk over each other, it's with this great new program developed by Derek Slopey and Michael W. Dean called Fiend Phone, and you can learn more about that at fiendphone.com. It's the future, man. It's the future of communication. Voice over internet protocol, baby.
Worms.
It's great. So, also, to give a shout out,
I want to demonstrate how cool Fiend Phone is, because I just talked over you.
That's why. And, yeah.
So, this is usually not good for radio.
We can do. No.
But it is very cool that you can do it with this program, because there's nothing else on the market that exists, and it's free.
Yeah. Free. Freedom. So, we were talking about Mama Liberty in the last segment before we go back to that article, and she's a really hip cat, and if you want to check out some of her writings, you can go over to thepriceofliberty.org, and she's got some cool stuff there. So, yeah, priceofliberty.org, check it out. All right, so we're going back to 10 Traits for Better Living by Claire Wolfe.
Yeah, plug us back in.
We're at number 3.
Yeah.
Number 3 is a connection to the future. This is a really hard one for me. So, this article grew out of a shorter piece I posted on my Backwoods Home blog. The original post didn't include this trait, though it's huge. Blog reader Larry A. commented, "My wife and I attended the wedding of a couple of school friends. During the reception, they announced they had both quit smoking because what they were spending on cigarettes would make the payments on a nice new car." Planning ahead, he noted, should be one of the first traits listed for greater life satisfaction. He went on, "No, the plans don't always work, but they're better than not having one." Now, personally, I'm not that committed to a long-term planning, at least not in the rigid sense of having steps all spelled out for getting from point A to point Z. But whether you're a serious planner or a hang-loose person, which is totally me, it is important to feel a connection to the future, to understand that the actions we take today have consequences tomorrow. Now, this one really kind of resonated with me. I used to have a friend online, a very dear friend who's no longer with us. And when I was going through a tough time, she was kind of helping me through it. And she said, "You know, one of the things that you struggle with is you don't see what your life will be like in the future, you know."
Yeah.
5 years from now, 1 month, you know, 1 year from now, 6 months, 1 week. She said, "You've got to start to put together a plan of some sort, you know, some broad sweeping goal, nothing very specific."
Was this an older person? You said she's no longer with us, so like,
well, she wasn't old. I mean, she was only 48. She was kind of young.
Okay, but has enough time to have that life perspective to be like, I tried to guess what it's going to be like in 5 years, and I was dead wrong. Yeah.
She's seen more than me, so you know.
Yeah.
I try to appreciate the wisdom in our elders, even if they're not.
You're
that much
pretty
older.
Old too, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm wicked old man. I'm like,
oh no,
somewhere in my 30s.
Yeah, there you go. And I'm 25.
Yeah, you know, she's one of the things she.
So I've got no perspective.
Yeah, you're just a pup, man. Yeah, I remember what it was like to be 25 and invincible. Oh yes, but you know, one of the things she told me is once you get that broad picture, start write down just little steps. You know, a little step you can take every day. You know, whether it's quitting smoking, losing weight, owning a home, improving your relationship with your significant other. It doesn't matter. Little steps. And just list them out so that you can reference them. And
where do you list
drive
them, though?
Yourself slowly but surely.
Where do you put them? Like all
wherever
over your
you
walls?
Want, man. I'm not going to tell you where to put them.
Yeah.
You're going to put them wherever they work
somewhere,
for you.
Somewhere you'll see them. Maybe the fridge. I am obsessive about
tattoo
this.
Tattoo them on your hand. I don't know.
Yeah, I have several whiteboards around my room, and I plan out my day every day. Like, I've got the next 2 months all pre-planned. If anything, you know, I need to add or subtract, I can do that with the whiteboard. And then on my door, where I enter and exit my bedroom, I have a whiteboard for the next 24 hours. So, like, I am obsessively planning my future, maybe to a fault. Because it's easier to overload yourself when you're like, wow, look at all this empty space. Let me fill it in. And then you've taken up on too many responsibilities. At least that's sometimes what I do. And then you ruin some of the fun of life, some of the spontaneity. So, yeah,
I think
overload this number three connection to the future thing and get too bad on it. But it's cool. Sorry.
This goes with any of the steps.
Yeah.
You got to find that personal balance. You know, you don't want to be too obsessive. You don't want to be too lax. You know, you got to find that center and work from that center outward.
The other thing about this one that I think is really cool, and I'm glad that it's included on this list, is if this is a very human trait, this connection to the future. I don't see any plants that are like, well, in 4 years, I'm going to, you know, relocate to a better pond, or, you know, I'm going to quit smoking so that I can buy myself a car. Like, there are no plants or animals that I see with any connection to the future. But humans can.
That's not true.
Humans can do that and plan. Which ones? Which animals connect
animals
to the future?
Well, let's just take squirrels, for instance, because
I had
a squirrel. Oh, I didn't even tell you this, but I came home the other day. It's been a tough week for me. I came home the other day, and there was a red squirrel in my kitchen.
Are you about to tell me you have a pet squirrel?
I was not impressed.
Are you a crazy person?
No. This is not a pet. This was a freak me out moment.
Okay.
So, yes, there was a red squirrel. And red squirrels, and if you know anything about them, you don't want them in your house. They're not good.
They're
so
vicious,
anyway,
right?
But,
right?
Squirrels.
Yeah, they plan for the future.
Yeah,
I stand corrected. Okay, well, you know.
Winter is coming. Got to plan for the food, you know. So it does happen in nature. So it is kind of a natural process.
Okay, well, so I think it's part of what makes us human, though.
Definitely.
So what's the next?
This leads us to number four.
Next step.
Creativity or spirituality. It's funny how each of these traits for satisfaction keeps leading into the next. Because although any grown-up can understand that these actions have consequences, those who develop their creativity or have a sense of spirituality often possess heightened understanding of how today's choices can become tomorrow's realities. Creative or spiritual people see beyond, not only in the sense of perceiving things that others may miss, but also in feeling connected to the things they haven't happened yet, that haven't happened yet. But can, depending on our choices. It's too bad that in our culture, creativity has been raised on some silly pedestal where only artists, writers, and musicians and other odd souls are thought to stand, because creativity is actually a trait we all possess, and it comes in handy for many everyday things. Creativity could be finding some ways to utilize someone else's discards or figuring out how to make scrumptious meals from simple, inexpensive ingredients. It could mean making inexpensive entertainment for ourselves and our children when money is tight. It could mean seeing a way to make an independent living after losing what we thought was a secure job. It is simply seeing and acting upon possibilities that others may not perceive. Both creativity and spirituality involve looking within oneself and living with one's own mind, feelings, and beliefs. This can be painful at times, but doing so builds inner resources that in turn can help build life satisfaction. And if you really want to just boil this down, it's adapting. It's the ability to adapt to any situation and survive and even thrive.
Yeah, there are ways, like, I think of right-brained and left-brained people, and she's right that there are people who are boxed into a corner of creativity, like, oh, I went to art school, therefore I'm creative, and you are an accountant, therefore you possess no creativity. But that's not true. I mean, there are other examples in life.
Like, well, even though accountants are some of the most creative people in the world when they get to balance those books.
Oh, yeah, good point. And, like, what about coming up with inexpensive entertainment for children? Putting on a puppet show or, you know, a show on the wall with, I don't know, what do they do with lights? With
shadow puppets.
Shadow puppets, yeah. You know, anyone could do that. Or, just thinking outside the box in all kinds of ways. So, yeah, I like that one.
Yeah, it's kind of funny. That reminded me. I wrote something today, posted it. I tend to write freestyle, prose, poetry, bad stuff. I don't know, whatever.
That's
you want
your
to call
creative
it.
Outlet?
That's one of them. And, you know, in one of the lines, and it was, you know, growing up in the 80s, we didn't have good computers or smartphones. You know, maybe one lucky kid had a Nintendo. The rest of us had imagination, you know. So it was interesting, and we adapted to that. And I can remember as a kid, rarely, it's really weird. I find myself sometimes bored now, but when I was a kid, I was rarely ever bored. So I think
was your imagination stronger?
Without a doubt, I think the imagination was stronger. The sense of adventure, just getting out and doing something was definitely more so. So
maybe it was because you had other people to be creative with and use your imaginations together.
I think that's part of it for sure. I tended to be a little bit of an introvert and solitary person, so that's probably why my imagination fostered even more. But
well, that brings us to point number five.
It does. Support networks. And no, we're not talking about Facebook. That is not a, well,
I think of like IT support when I hear support networks. I'm like, yeah, where's the IT department? They're my support.
I suppose social networking could be a support network, but I to each his own, I guess.
It is. Yeah, it is for some people. There are like groups on Facebeef and ways for people to connect.
Yeah,
I think that's revolutionary.
It is. It's a way to connect people. So, yeah, I suppose it is.
Yeah.
So if looking within is important, so is looking to others. Happy, satisfied people have friends and are not the kind you get from clicking like buttons online or the kind you go drinking with but never really know. They have close connections to others, and that's true even for hermits like me. Friends offer support both emotional and physical. They give reality checks. They carry us out of ourselves when we get too broody or failing to see the forest for the trees. Both mental and physical health are improved by knowing that there's somebody there for us, whether our need is for a good cry or somebody to care for us while we break a leg. If we break a leg, not while. We don't want them encouraging. So, yeah, you know, I don't know. I have friends on Facebook that I've never met in person that I know quite well and I'm very close with. So social networks, support networks, they can be a variety of things.
You're listening to Freedom Fiends. Go to freedomfiends.com to help keep it drone-proof.
Now that the elections are over and liberty has slipped even further away, it's time to try yet another political organization. Campaign for a Longer Leash is a nonpartisan group of pups and dogs dedicated to fighting for longer leashes for all. We're not talking about no leashes, that would be catarchy. We just want the limited leash that the Hounding Fathers promised us. As Bone Barklin once said, a longer leash if you can keep it, ma'am. For more info, go to facebook.com/campaignforalongerleash.
We're talking about friends, having friends. It's so important. Having a support network, people to keep you in check so you don't go crazy or do things that you wouldn't otherwise do and lose your sense of self, because other people can help keep that sense of self by keeping an eye on you. Do you agree, Chandler?
Well, absolutely, yeah.
I feel this. That was point number 5. We're going through 10 ways... 10 Traits for Better Living by Claire Wolf, and number 5 was a support network. I think that's so valuable. You know, telling your... having a friend...
A different perspective is a good thing to have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I don't know about you, Chandler, but I've had periods of my life where I'm in, like, total seclusion from the rest of the world, and, you know, pretty much living in a hole in the wall. And
that's
not
pretty much
how
I do every day.
that's your life. But, you know, even in those times, I think it's in those times when I start to really go crazy. Like,
yes,
you can fall down a rabbit hole of either conspiracy theory nonsense, or you grab onto a book and just get obsessive over it. I don't know. That's just been my examples.
Well, yeah, you know, it's funny you should say that, because I'm kind of there right now. I've been reading A Song of Fire and Ice by George R. R. Martin, which is the Game of Thrones series.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
You can really get lost in those J.R.R. Books, right?
Man, they're just sucking me in. And they're big books, too. I'm not used to read. Like, I don't know. I like to read, but, you know, reading 1,200-page books and just cycling through them.
Well,
but it's kind of ruined
it,
the TV show for me. I can't watch the TV show now. I tried watching it, and I'm like, no, this is all wrong.
Well, don't let your only friends be characters on a page. Have someone to keep you in check and hold up a mirror every once in a while.
Oh, for sure. And that is where, you know, when you're stuck in a winter wasteland, that is the value of social networking, because when you don't leave your house much, at least you can connect with people that way.
Worms.
So number 6, I love this one, a belief in lemonade.
Huh?
You don't have to be an optimist. In fact, recent research indicates that optimism may be overrated when it comes to being successful or happy. Optimism can work for optimists, but we pessimists, grouches, and cynics have our own ways of getting things to work out well. And as a side note, I try to be optimistic, but I consider myself a realist, you know? If the glass is not half full, I'm not going to say it is, you know. You got to be real about things. So, yeah. Above all, people who aim most successfully for satisfaction understand that even terrible things can eventually have positive consequences. That doesn't mean we don't feel loss or grief or fear or annoyance when bad things happen. On the contrary, we may feel them deeply. Yet at some level, we know that this, too, shall pass. And that we may find growth and new opportunity on the other side of suffering. In the terrible moments, we may cry to the heavens, "Why me?" But we don't get stuck there forever like some people do. By acknowledging the possibility of positive consequences, we are open to them and help create them. In other words, people on the road to commitment know how to make the proverbial lemonade out of the bromidic lemons. I don't know what bromidic is, but yeah.
Huh. Yeah, I don't know what that is either. Maybe we could look that up. But, you know, I disagree a little bit with your assessment or your, I don't know, the way you say, oh, I'm a realist. Like, everyone does choose a side. There's either negativity or positivity. Like, because the default, and maybe I'm wrong, but the default, the way I see things, of the human mind is negativity. Like, if you don't... cultivate.
That's probably true.
If you don't cultivate actively a positive attitude, you will default to negativity. And hear this: a positive attitude will help you achieve everything better than a negative attitude.
It's like I always say, hope for the best, but prepare for the worst. And by the way, bromidic means lacking in originality.
Oh, nice. Thank you, internets.
Yeah,
it's nice. It's nice we can not only get 10 traits for better living thanks to the internets, we can not only connect our voices and be our own support networks over the internets, but also we can use a dictionary over the internets.
I loves it.
Making the world a better place.
We should be back and finish this up and then maybe talk about the so-called justice system.
Yeah, we've got more points to make your life better. And then we've both got some experience with injustice in the state justice system. I can't wait to hear what traffic court was like for you, Chandler. On Friday the 13th of all days.
Oh, yes. Worms.
Worms!
This show survives on donations from fiends like you. We put that money back into our show and Liberty Outreach and donate most of our ad space to Liberty organizations that make a difference. We're also a teaching hospital, educating the next generation of Liberty Talkers on the skills needed to keep the radio flame of truth burning into the future. Put your money where your heart is and make a donation of any amount to the Freedom Fiends. Please go to freedomfiends.com and click on the spinning coin on any post.
Are you tired of your taxes funding endless occupations around the world? Antiwar.com is run by people who understand that wars abroad become wars at home, wars on our freedoms. Antiwar.com is dedicated to bringing you the latest in news, views, interviews, and reviews from the top movers and shakers in the anti-occupation movement. Antiwar.com has it all, from thorough foreign policy analysis to interviews with whistleblowers who used to run the military-industrial complex. Antiwar, pro-free market. That's antiwar.com.
You with liberty. And yes, we are beaming this meow therapy into space. Derek J here with you.
I have a kitty on my lap.
Aw. And the jabbering coon cat, Chandler St. Pierre.
That's right, I like the jabber.
Yeah. And you're jabbering away, telling us 10 traits for better living by Claire Wolf, who wrote an awesome book that you plugged in the first hour called, what is it called?
Rats.
Yeah, but it has like some long title too. It's at rats-nosnitch.com.
Yeah, it's really rad. And it's a short, easy read, and it's a good way to protect yourself.
Wait, yeah, a way to keep yourself safe from rats, people who seek to do you harm by revealing private information about you to the government. And are you safe, Chandler? While we were away, were you contacted by the government?
No, I'm safe, man. I got my bunker all wrapped in tin foil and a Faraday cage, and I'm good.
Good. Me too. So we're gonna wrap this up. The 10 traits for better living. We're gonna talk about court and how much fun you had on Friday the 13th. And if there's time, I'd like to talk about the no-gov license that Michael blogged about at fiendphone.com today.
Oh,
Fiendphone,
yes.
The product that is free that over which we are
right
speaking.
Now to talk over each other.
Yeah. So let's do it. Frugality. Speaking of free, that's
all right,
point
so
number
this
seven.
Is number seven in 10 traits for better living, which we you can find if you just Google Claire Wolf, 10 Traits for Better Living. I'm on backwoodshome.com reading one of her articles. So frugality, certainly in the backwoods home universe, satisfied people are neither extravagant nor stingy. They're frugal. Uncontrolled spending and obsessive cheapness both imply an unhealthy relationship with money. Frugality, on the other hand, speaks of personal wisdom. It also speaks of a number of other traits that we've talked about. Choice, responsibility, creativity, and a connection with the future. Frugality means setting and following priorities. It means getting creative with grandma's old maxim, use it up, wear it out, make it do, or do without. It means choosing not to buy this while saving for something more important than that. It means seeing good possibilities within limitations and difficulties. In a world where money issues often get downright scary, frugality means feeling that we have some control over the situations that may be somewhat out of our control. Frugality is only partly about money. It's much more about mindset.
How's this related for you? Yeah, I don't know. This is true for me. I had to learn a lot about this because both of my parents are horrible with money. So a lot of my early childhood examples were like, spend everything you have, like make lots of money and then spend it. And that's sort of how my parents did things. And they're like, in my view, very not prepared for their old age and future. So I'm terrified by that. And I learned to prepare a lot better than they did by saving money and buying quality and buying less stuff. Like, so I drive a BMW, and I know that's like, you drive a BMW. But it's, and I get made fun of, like, when I go to court, people are like, oh, are you a lawyer? Whatever. But it's not, it's an old BMW. I bought it used. And I bought it because it's quality. Like, I've my first three cars or whatever were Honda, old Hondas, and they were great, too, but they're a little bit cheaper.
Oh,
they
yes,
wear down
I drive a POS Toyota that's falling apart.
Yeah, and
but
they're great.
It still runs.
Yeah, I've had that. I've had a Toyota Camry, and they're great. But the thing that I learned through all of these experiences, like, each of my first three cars, while affordable and cheap and, you know, semi-reliable, they all died. They all broke down. I wore them to their very last, and that wasn't fun. And so I learned, okay, by buying the cheaper option, I'm really not saving myself any money here. So by buying quality, I am saving money over the long run, and that's what it's about: saving up, buying the right thing, and not buying frivolous things to go with it. Like, I'm not putting in some new stereo. My BMW has a tape deck, okay, and I'm dealing with that.
Awesome.
I think it's rad. So anyway, that's how frugality.
Cool.
That's what it means to me. Is I don't have very many things in life. I have very few possessions, and the things that I do have are of the highest quality.
Yeah, I kind of go with the grandma's maxim. My grandmother was a big part in raising me. And, you know, she grew up on the tail end of the Great Depression. And she kind of instilled some of those values into me. I have a junk drawer. I save things. I'm not quite as bad as some people. I'm not, what's the new term, hoarder? Or whatever. If it's junk, I'm going to throw it away. But I often find uses, if there's a little, roll of extra wire or something, I'll probably throw it in the junk drawer because, you know what? Come 6 months down the road, I may have to make a improvised improvement to hold my bumper on my car. And hey, that wire comes in handy.
Yep.
So, I tend to use things to their fullest extent, and I agree with you. Sometimes it is about quality rather than economy.
Yeah, what about thrift stores? I work at a thrift store, and so I see a lot of this frugality.
Yeah,
but I think it's a virtue there.
Go ahead.
Okay, all right. Well, with clothes, like especially in a thrift store, that's the thing I think most people get is clothes. Because they really don't go bad, they just go out of fashion. So if you can find clothes in a thrift store that are classic style and made of good quality for very cheap, that's a way that's going to save you a lot of money, and I think that's a good frugal tip for life.
I agree. One of my favorite stores, actually, is the Salvation Army, as funny as that sounds.
The Army?
That's probably not hip or whatever, or maybe it is a hipster thing.
No, they're not hip, because, whatever. I
don't know, man. But yeah, I know. I know where you're going with that one. But no, the people there are really cool, and at that particular store, and they've got some good deals. I go to Goodwill sometimes too, and I like Goodwill because they support individuals with developmental disabilities, which is the field of work I'm in.
Oh, right
on. You know, they've become quite a commercial enterprise, and actually a lot of times stuff at Goodwill is just as expensive, so it's give or take. But no, thrift stores in general, there's a couple in my hometown. I like going to those. I've always been, you never know what you're going to find when you go there, especially older stuff. So yeah, it's all about being frugal. I love it.
Yeah, but it's not about thinking poor, which is point number right. eight.
Yeah, so this is a big one, I think, for a lot of us. I know it is for me. The original post that led to this article was specifically about how to be happy and satisfied while not having much money. Oh, isn't that the trick? This article goes beyond that, but for many of us, even some folks with big bank accounts, not thinking poor is still an issue. Obviously, being genuinely poor can be desperately stressful. It's hell not to know where your next rent payment or next week's groceries are coming from. It can be better seeing others casually acquiring things that are beyond your reach. Oh, do I know that feeling. But the middle class and upper types have their own version of thinking poor. How many people with perfectly decent, reliable incomes lie awake at night fretting about their debts or fearing that something, inflation, recession, divorce, illness, downsizing, will come along and sweep away all their hard-won possessions? People on the road to satisfaction acknowledge the possibility of loss, but they don't allow the fear to dominate their lives. Ironically, another form of thinking poor is having a consuming desire not to seem poor. One blog reader put it very well. I have known people who would not eat foods they considered only fit for poor people. Staples like beans, rice, corn bread, ramen noodles, onion sandwiches, mystery meat, etc. I feel sad for them. Some of the best meals I've eaten are with poor people. Amen to that. Beans and rice and cornbread scooped from cauldrons and platters and eaten while squatting on the ground is mighty fine eats. Just ask your companions to divine hot meals before eating the salsa. Some of the greatest richness in the world is experienced by being open to experiencing and learning from simplicity, deprivation, and hardship.
What's your favorite poor person meal? Mine is macaroni and cheese with chopped up hot dogs.
Yeah, if you throw some ketchup in there, I could go along with that.
Yeah, definitely with ketchup, obviously.
I don't know, man. I think my favorite poor meal, it's one that I actually really like a lot, is a slice of ham and an egg on an English muffin or a piece of toast. I love that. I just, it doesn't take a lot to make, and I go buy farm eggs, and it's pretty cool.
That's simple, and if you make it right, that can actually look elegant, whereas like with macaroni and cheese and hot dogs, I don't think there's any way to really make that look attractive. But with eggs and an English muffin, you could actually, that's pretty. And that's not to say that I eat macaroni and cheese with hot dogs very often, but I'm just saying, I was surprised at some poor meals. Like, I've been really poor in my life in times, and my least favorite is ramen noodles. When you're scraping the bottom, and just eating ramen noodles, there's no nutrition in that.
No, there's not.
And it doesn't even fill you up or hold you over. It's just terrible.
Well, it's funny because I haven't been doing this much, but I do the food storage, the preparation. I guess I'm
good for you.
Crazy preppers,
you're
or
a
whatever.
Squirrel. You're squirreling away. You're nuts for the future.
Yeah, and I will just throw that reminder that good preppers already know. But if you do store food, make sure you rotate it, because I went through and rotated some food here a few months ago, and I was like, "Whoa, gotta use this stuff up."
Yeah, it's an important
but,
one.
You know, it's funny because one of the things I had stockpiled was Spam, and I will honestly say, up until a year ago, I had never eaten Spam.
I've never had it. It's got a bad rep.
It's not that bad. And my kid, she loves it. She's like, "Dad," we go up to Sam's Club. She's like, "Dad, why don't you grab a big thing of that Spam? That's good stuff."
She whispers like that, like she's afraid other people will hear. Like, "Hey,
Oh no, she doesn't care. She's like, "Dad, that's good stuff, man."
I heard there are special recipes for that stuff. I'll have to embrace it. We've got more.
The next one works, man.
The next tip is learning to relax. Just relax, man, and embrace the chaos.
I love it.
Yeah, I have a feeling you do that well.
I do.
Worms.
Worms.
You're You're listening to Freedom Fiends. So much truth, it hurts.
Shiny badges on your jacket. Shiny badges. Yeah!
This is Davi Barker from shinybadges.com, and I just want to personally apologize for airing a jingle week after week, month after month, that turned out to be such an infectious brain worm. So to make it up to you, I'm offering a free gift. The next time you make a purchase at shinybadges.com, write worms in the transaction comments, and I'll send you something weird.
You've read books, attended lectures, and you know the Constitution well enough to know it's a well-crafted blueprint to create an ever-increasing federal empire. But there's still one thing missing.
Buttons!
Freedom Fiends now has buttons. You'll get state speech is hate speech, guns and weed,
buy sheep for sheep on sheep,
and two designs for the Freedom Fiends. Wear them with pride. Use them to start conversations with statists.
It's only $10 for 10 buttons, including shipping.
Go to freedomfiends.com and click on the link at the top that says buttons.
What does freedom mean? Tune in to LRN.FM to find out. LRN.FM is the Liberty Radio Network, a collection of live talk radio and podcasts, all coming from a principled pro-liberty perspective. LRN.FM show hosts aren't left, right, or conspiracy kooks. You can tune in 24/7 to LRN.FM via your phone, computer, satellite, and more. Listen free anytime at LRN.FM. That's LRN.FM.
Meow. 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 Meow.
Words.
Meow.
All right, Freedom Fiends. Sit down. You're going to learn to relax. Which is point number 9 on the 10 traits for better living. Just embrace the chaos.
As Chong says, I'm not really into time, man.
What? Yeah, I guess so.
Oh, you're probably too young for the Cheech and Chong movies.
Over my head. I know, I saw them, but I was like...
Actually, it's not even from the movie. It's from their spoken word comedy album, Greatest Hit.
Yeah, then that's definitely over my head. Sorry, man. That's cool. But you said it in the right voice. Stuff. It was funny.
Yeah.
No, yeah, they're cool. Learn to relax.
All right, so learning to relax. This trait was suggested by my friend Joel, who is both one of the poorest yet most contented people I know. He says when a plan or routine fails, there's always a period when you feel like you're falling. The first instinct is to thrash around, grasping for what isn't there. But what you really need to be doing is deploying or rapidly composing. Plan B. Plan B often proves flawed, but that's fine. It's a starting point. At least you get working. Somewhere between Plan B and Plan BZ, you'll find your new normal, but only if you're working towards it. Get past the panic, relax, accept, keep moving. A small daily meditation helps too. It helps calm the spirit and wake up the creative part of your brain. I agree with that. Pretty much that's it.
Worms, I have a brief story that working at the thrift store, I've learned a lot from the owner who is very good at this. He's able to have a plan B and a C and a D. And, you know, you just keep moving. Like, you just don't worry about what disasters are falling all around you. And you just keep going. I mean, that's part of life. Yeah, there's always going to be some obstacle that ruins plan A. I mean, when it doesn't happen, that's great. But often it is the case that things don't go as planned, and you just keep moving. Don't worry about it.
Right on. So number 10, finally, gratitude. We've all heard one short parable about gratitude and perspective. Though it's 1,000 years old, a writer named Dennis Whiteley gets credit for putting it like this. I had the blues because I had no shoes, until upon the street I met a man who had no feet. The lesson, of course, is be grateful for what you have. Satisfied people are grateful people. They dwell not on what they don't have, but on what they do have that's worth having. Spend a few minutes every day thinking of 5 things you're grateful for, big or small. Write them down in a journal. Every so often, go back and read them over. You'll be astonished that even if your life feels difficult, You have a lot to be grateful for and a lot of gratitude attitude to carry you along. This, it's perfect. You know, I've fought with some downtimes and had some struggles like everyone else. And it is quite amazing when you stop feeling sorry for yourself and stop blaming, you know, this cruel universe. And you just start to realize, you know, things are tough. Things didn't go the way I planned. But, you know, I've got a lot of cool stuff. I do it all the time, you know, when I start feeling down. I mean, I tell my kid all the time, you know, we got a roof over our head, food in our bellies, friends and family that care about us. You know, I get to get on the internet and the radio and yak with cool people like Michael W. Dean and Derek J.
Hey,
about freedom. You know, be grateful for what you have. And when you start to see that and accept that, you'll start to see that life's problems and hardships aren't quite as bad as they could be. And it kind of lifts you up.
It's so true. There's another saying that I like. Attitude is everything. So pick a good one. And this thing about gratitude is what brought me, I think, from angry young man to wise old sage. Because now, like, so I was just doing this. I was emailing my mom before the show. She was asking, like, oh, it's awfully cold over there. How are you holding up? I'm like, yeah, it's cold. It stinks. But, you know, remember that bunny hat you bought me or whatever was like for Christmas years ago? I'm wearing it and it's keeping me warm. It's like, yeah, it's one of the coldest winters in history, and here I am thankful and grateful for this hat that I've got. You know, like, yeah, you can either look at the world like, oh man, it's so cold, woe is me, or like, yeah, it's cold, and look, I'm a little more prepared for this. Like you said, you know, you have food in your belly, and you're better off than most humans throughout history.
Agreed. So when we get back, we're going to yak about the injustice of the justice system.
And yeah, let's go to court.
Can I rant on that?
Worms.
Worms.
You're listening to the Freedom Fiends, and I'm beaming these words into your cerebellum.
Love the Fiends and want to help out? We do take donations, and we put them back into our Liberty Projects. You can make a donation by clicking on the spinning coin on any post. But what if you want to help, but you ain't got no cash? Or you made a donation and you want to help more? Here's how you can help. Download and seed our torrents to help keep us drone-proof. There's a Torrent Club link at the top of freedomfiends.com. You can also blog the Fiends and share episode links on Facebook, Twitter, and elsewhere. You can rate and review our movies on Amazon and IMDb. You can rate and review the Freedom Fiends and our songs on iTunes. That really helps a lot. You can buy our movies and share them with friends or give them out as gifts. And one of the best ways to spread liberty is to buy a bunch of Freedom Fiends buttons and give them out as gifts. Wholesale prices are available, and you can also comment on our site, or better yet, comment about us on other sites. And please email the site link to all your friends. Thanks for helping spread the Fiends message worldwide to as many Liberty people as you can, especially to those who don't yet get it. You rock.
Yeah.
So I think I should change my name from the Jabbering Coon Cat to the Robot Coon Cat.
Ooh, yeah, that's... Well, you jabber and you robot. You do both. Yeah. And it sounds lovely.
Jabbering Robot Coon Cat.
Yeah.
I'm a cyborg.
There you go. And I am the Warrant Canary. I'll let you know if we've been contacted by the government. So I don't care. But, hey.
Yeah, me neither.
So we just went through the 10 traits for better living, and the sum total of everything that we talked about is that it's all about choices and making good ones, and it's small choices over a lifetime that add up to a great life. The end. Now let's talk about court. You went to court.
Oh, yes.
You went to court on Friday the 13th. Didn't you know that was going to turn out bad? I mean, couldn't you have continued your thing and just been like, I object because it's a superstitious holiday and this is not going to go well for me?
It probably should have. Yeah. It's funny because the last two times I've been to traffic court, the cop hasn't showed up.
Ugh, traffic court.
I have luck with that. But there was no luck on Friday the 13th. So
traffic court is the special court, too, because there are no rules, right? Like, in most court, they have to follow certain rules of evidence. But in traffic court, you're super guilty until proven innocent.
Right. And there are rules. There are the rules of evidence and the procedural thing that goes along with that.
Yeah.
However, it's been my observation that in traffic court, the rules are specifically set up to benefit the state. Now, I did a little rant on, my Google Plus and Twitter and Facebook the day of Reckoning, Friday the 13th, and I'll just read that and go through it.
Yeah.
But without government, who would fleece money out of all the poor people? Apparently, Friday the 13th is not a good day to go to traffic court. But then, in all honesty, when is a good day?
Never.
I maintain my argument that there is no justice in the justice system. It's simply a system devised to give the common folk the appearance of recourse, all the while justifying, enabling, and legalizing highway robbery by the king's men. And make no mistake, that's what they are, these so-called police officers. The whole ceremony of contesting a citation and asking for a trial is a sham. By the judge's own admission, the burden of proof lies upon the defendant and not the state. All that is needed by the state is a preponderance of the evidence, basically the cop's word against yours. Yet the defendant is supposedly innocent until proven guilty. Now, the judge said that. How does that work exactly? In this particular instance I'm talking about, even if I was guilty, which I'm not, I stopped at a stop sign, and there was no way that the cop could have seen me from the distance he was at. There was no victim, no one was harmed, and I was not unsafe. Yet I am compelled to give what little money I don't have to this beast called the state. Angry does not accurately describe how I feel at the moment. Keep voting. Keep the system going, and this is exactly what you'll get. So, I got a citation.
No. Tell me about your feelings. Tell me about your feelings. You said angry is not what you feel, so tell me what you are feeling.
It was sort of a slow rage that has begun to boil. I very much dislike the state, and I know this probably offends people that think that, we just need to get back to the Constitution. But the Constitution has allowed what you see before us today. And if you doubt me, read a really good book by Boston Tea Party, a.k.a. Kenneth Royce, called Hologram of Liberty, Big Government's Alliance with the Constitution. It'll really make you think.
Now, you dodged my question. You dodged my question. You just said a slow rage. Is that it? What were your feelings? Tell me about your feelings that day. Let's get in touch with that.
Talk about my feels, man.
Yes, I do. I want to get there.
I was very calm and collected in the courtroom.
Yeah. Were you afraid? Were you nervous?
I observed and I listened.
That's what you did. But what were you feeling?
I was feeling very... What is this? Psychotherapy hour?
No,
or what?
It's just that we all... Why do we avoid court? Because it's terrifying. There are feelings associated with that building. It's not because we observe.
It was a little bit terrifying. Like, getting up to speak in front of the judge and in front of the few people and the cluster of police officers that was gathered there was a little intimidating. But at the same time, I wanted to. So bad. I wanted to just go and make a statement.
Were you shaking?
No. Well, I was a little upset. Maybe shaking from anger.
Even on my best days in court, I shake. I get nervous. Yeah. I know there's nothing to be afraid of. I'm not going to be arrested. You know, I can say pretty much whatever I want, but I still shake. It's so nerve-wracking. I think the reason I'm talking about feelings is because I get so emotional in court. I'm shocked that you don't. I think everyone does. It's scary. It's like a church where they dole out punishments right there. And,
yes.
Yeah, anyway, sorry. So what was really going on? You wanted to give a breakdown of like what happened. You're like, oh, so, the cop couldn't have seen me. What really happened here?
So I was out on a country road coming home from a friend's, and there's a stop sign, and then you go into the main road, and you know,
is it one of those unnecessary stop signs? We have a few of those in town. It doesn't really even matter.
At that given moment, you know, it was July 5th. That's the other thing. This was July 5th, and I just went to court Friday the 13th, February. Yeah. So, yeah, it was a little unnecessary, but whatever. You know, I know that cops frequently patrol that area. So I stopped, did my little three-second thing, and went, you know, because it's 9:30 at night on the 5th of July, and nobody's out in the roads. So the cop pulls me over, and the thing was, the cop came bombing down the road over a hill. Okay. So there's no way he could have seen me. We're talking like 200-300 yards. And he pulls me over and goes through the whole spiel and writes me a ticket. And I said, look, man, I'm going to appeal to your humanity right now.
You said those words? I'm going to appeal to your humanity?
I'm going to appeal to your humanity, because I know there's still some semblance of it left in that shell of yours underneath that uniform.
You
I didn't say that.
Yeah, okay.
I didn't say that, but I said I'm going to appeal to your humanity.
What did he look like when you said that? I mean, did his eyes
He had this blank stare, and he was actually... I'll get to this. Okay. So, he says, you know, I said, I'm a single dad. I need to drive for a living. I am, you know, I pay my taxes, I do all that, yada, yada, yada. I really can't afford this ticket. And he says, well, you should have thought of that before you ran the stop sign. I said, well, you know, I didn't run that stop sign.
He says,
well, you need to be personally responsible. And I wanted to go into my whole anarchist spiel. And
you're let me tell you about personal responsibility, bub.
Yeah. I said, well, you know, I actually am very big on personal responsibility, and I agree with you. I think more people should be.
You know what? He was trying to entrap you. He was trying to get you to admit that you did something you didn't do. If he can get you to say that, you shouldn't have done that.
It wouldn't have mattered at that point, because he had already written the ticket.
Yeah, but still.
That would have given him some satisfaction.
Yeah, and then later in court, he could be like, well, and the defendant even admitted it, that he shouldn't have done this.
Well, and I've noticed that a lot of people go in, because the whole sham is you go in, you talk to the DA, and they'll say, all right, we'll reduce your fine.
Yeah.
And, you know, you admit to it, we reduce your fine, you pay it, and you're out of here.
Yeah, it's called a plea deal.
I refuse to do that.
And like 99% of things that, of charges never make it to court because of this process called a plea deal.
Right.
Where you just plead guilty and then help the process move along.
No. See, I automatically, no matter what it is, right or wrong, I automatically contest. It's just the default state of being. So I get into court, and the judge goes through a spiel. One of the things he talked about was, I found very interesting. In traffic court, when it comes to speeding violations, he is compelled to, how did he put it? If it's a radar gun, a plane, you know, that sort of thing that supposedly tags you for speeding, he is compelled by state law to find that evidence admissible and accurate. You can't contest it. Like in some states, you can say, well, was the radar gun properly calibrated? When was it calibrated? Blah, blah, blah. You can't do that in Maine. He literally said, as a officer of the court, I am compelled to accept that, and you can't contest it, basically, is what he said.
Objection, I can't get a fair trial because I can't challenge the evidence.
That's the whole thing. So,
yeah. So did you make that objection?
Well, I didn't have a speeding ticket.
Oh, okay.
So, you know, and the other thing was, I had to take the morning off to go to court. I couldn't afford to take the afternoon off because I work for a living, and I can't be sitting there arguing with idiots in court.
That's why most people plea out, because they don't have the time to go to this thing.
So what they do, right, you show up at 8 a.m., right, and you wait for an hour till the DA gets there and the judge gets all comfy and everyone goes in the courtroom and
they call off the names individually. You have to be there at a certain time, like 8:30 a.m. The judge doesn't have to be there. He can get there whenever he feels like it, right?
Oh,
isn't that how it worked?
That is, and nor do the cops. Like, the last time I got there, I was there at 8 a.m., said to the DA, where's the cop? He's not here. I want this dismissed. She said, oh, the cops don't have to be here till the afternoon, till trial time. I was like, no, I don't think so.
Yeah, see, there are different rules for you and for them. So, exactly. Objection, I can't get a fair trial. Hello?
So, the whole thing boils down to, this system is, like I said before, it is set up to give the appearance of recourse for the individual who is charged. But you have no recourse. Once you enter their domain, like, I love the Patriot types, you know, that will quote passages from Black's Law Dictionary, which I understand and I get. And they're probably right. And, you know, the sovereign citizen types, those people. But you've got to understand, you can quote all the factual law, you know, the principles of international law, the principles of American jurisprudence. You can quote all that, but the judge is going to laugh at you. It's his courtroom. And if he doesn't want to accept that, he doesn't have to. And there's no accountability.
Yeah, I like to say...
The judge is the ultimate arbiter.
The first rule of court is there are no rules.
Oh, there are rules.
No, but the judge can waive whatever rules he wants at any time.
Yes.
That's always the first rule in the book.
Well, they set up the system so that their rules accommodate them. And you've got to remember that.
You're listening to The Freedom Fiends, an invigorating alternative to those other shows.
Hey, this is Squiskar Squiggles from Death Clocks, and you are listening to The Freedom Fiends on the, you know, the radios. And I guess I says worms now, so there you go.
Freedom Fiends.
Worms.
Chandler is crazy.
Oh, he's so crazy.
He's so mad right now.
He's so mad he's referring to himself in the third person.
He's gone mad, and he is mad. We got in touch with his feelings in the last segment about his slow rage burning bright in the courtroom of injustice.
Well, do you know what my theme song for that day was?
What?
It was Destroy Everything by Hatebreed.
Oh, man. What were you listening to it on your phone weren't allowed to have?
So all you listeners out there that are listening to really cool conservative talk radio, just go to YouTube and search Hatebreed, Destroy Everything. It's awesome. You'll love it.
Yeah, it's for everyone. So, Chandler, you were just telling me over the segment break that you weren't even allowed to have a phone in the courtroom. And I see this as a good reason. I'm always trying to convince you, hey, brother, you're so close to New Hampshire. You're over there in Maine. We're neighbors. You should just cross over this imaginary line that the government's made for us and come join New Hampshire and have a little bit more freedom, because here we can bring cameras into the courtroom, no problem. We can have cell phones. We could be chatting away on Facebook. You can even bring your cell phone up with you when you pass the bar and go before the judge. Like, I had my phone with me.
We don't pass the bar.
There's no
bar?
We
stay behind the bar with a little podium and a microphone and beg for the king's forgiveness and beg for the fine to be reduced.
So is that what you did? You were begging?
No. I was rather defiant. It obviously
now,
did got
they
me
wait?
Nowhere.
Sometimes courts will know, like, hey, this guy's going to be trouble. He's going to put up a fight. Why don't we just go through all the people who are going to plea out, not let them see this guy?
They go alphabetically.
Oh, okay.
And it's funny because they went through the list and the number of failure to appears was astonishing. Actually, the reason I told you about how the cell phone thing, I hauled my cell phone out and the bailiff came and said, sir, you need to put your cell phone away or I'll take it from you.
Thanks, like, Dad.
Arr,
yeah, who are you?
I'm trying not to get aggressive and angry.
In what other place would this be acceptable? I mean, imagine you're in a restaurant. Sir, if you use your cell phone, we're going to take that from you. I mean, they don't say it like
The difference is, in a restaurant, it would be voluntary because I am not compelled to go to that establishment.
Yeah, but they even wouldn't put it that way. They'd be like, oh, no, we don't have cell phones here, sir. Would you mind putting that away? It's not, I'm going to take it from you. I mean, where in the world do these
people...
But
I was compelled to appear, and that's actually in the language, you are compelled to appear before this court.
That's friendly.
So, I basically... Like I said, I work for a living. I can't spend time arguing with idiots in a circus. And I talked to the DA. Like, I went in and I said, I want to talk to the DA. They went through their whole thing and then the judge came out and I still hadn't talked to a DA. So he's like, you have three options. You know, you can beg, you can ask for a trial, you can ask to speak to the cop and the DA, or you can beg for the judge's forgiveness, basically. And he called my name, and I said, I'm still waiting to talk to the DA. They haven't addressed my concerns yet. He's like, okay. So I go to the DA, and I said, look, you know, I didn't commit this. And I said, well, despite the fact that the cop couldn't even have seen this from the distance, and the cop's standing right there, mind you. And he looks at me, and he says, look, Mr. St. Pierre, you've had since July to prepare for this fine. And I'm like, look, Mr. Officer, I didn't do anything wrong, and I'm not going to pay your tax. And the DA says, well, what would you suggest? And I said, you can, like, throw it away? And she's like, well, we can't do that. She says, we'll reduce the fine from $130 to $100. And I was like, that's really not acceptable because I don't have $100 to give you. So, you know, they gave me like 120 days and blah, 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 blah. So, you know, whatever. You just go in and you make the best of a bad situation. I got to pay the fine, whatever. But, you know, there are still other ways to resist.
At least you made them work for it, man. You know, yeah, all those other people just gave it away. And you're like, no, here, jump through some hoops. You have to.
Well, I'm going to send them. I have a $100 fine, and I'm going to send them $100 in pennies.
Ah, we'll see what they do with that. So I hope we call the hamster in your brain tonight. We've talked about 10 traits for better living and court. Now go play with Fiend Phone. It's fun. We've been doing it for the past 2 hours. Yeah. And Michael Dean will be back tomorrow to give you more liberty and worms.
And so will I.
Oh, rock on.